They fuck you.
Well, we're closing personal, I guess. All right, that's great. Thank you for getting us here safely as we open up this book where we ask that you teach us and lead us toward and just show us what's going on within the book that you have given us that tells us that we can have a blessing if we read it. Lord, as we read this book, it should not stir us as a spirit here, Lord, but we should remember that we have faith and that you have everything in control. And even though it may look rough and even be rough with us sometimes before all these things happen, you still are in control, Lord. And so we just ask that you just bless us and just lead us and guide us and teach us. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
All right, so got the board up on the plane.
Okay, you're good.
This is kind of a quick review, though. We opened up chapter 12. We see a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, the moon under her foot, and stars on her head, stars under 12 stars. So we know by reading through the last time we were together, that woman is indeed representative of the Jews. We did have a question last week that didn't come out. So the question was, there was some confusion. Read the account of Joseph.
All right.
So he said, I saw 11 stars, and he had a boy on the plane, 12 stars, and how that bringing all things together. You got to remember, Joseph was a 12 star. Joseph had a dream, like the 11 stars bowing down to him, that he was the 12th star. So there is no contradiction there. It's all just perspective. And then we learned in verse 2 that she being the child, that is the Christ, he is the Messiah. And ever since then, the war has been set first on the woman. That didn't work. And then when she had the child, Jesus, that didn't work all the way to the grave. And now the biggest war is upon the followers of Christ as he tries to take away our witness. In verse 4 of chapter 12, he drew a third of the stars of heaven. So when Satan was cast out of heaven, we fell from heaven, if you will, he drew a third of the angels with him. And even just from that one army that we read within the trumpets, 200 million fallen angels were just part of that one army. So one third of this massive population of angels which God created in the beginning, one third is a huge number. So when the dragon was thrown down, the beast was thrown down with the third of the angels, he wanted to try to consume Christ. And we saw that with Herod. Herod made the decree to kill all the firstborn when he heard that the Messiah could have possibly been born. And ever since that time, that war upon Christ, all the way up to the crucifixion, has been in place. And after the crucifixion, once they didn't accomplish, even though they thought they won, he didn't, because he rose again. Now that's on the believers. Interesting, though, and we'll get to it, probably when we get into chapter 13, we're going to start to take apart a little bit more, or break this down even more, with how Satan always copies what God is trying to do. And so the beast, we can continue that down, and we know that that is Satan. Okay? And then, from that point, we'll bust it down more, and we're going to start to talk about the beast, not only the beast, the dragon, I should say, the beast that Satan inhabits, is what we know as the Antichrist. So, you can see that pattern is going to come. And circling back to here, and with the Daniel description, part of the one world religion that we'll get a little bit into tonight, more probably next week, we see that Satan always has to work through an earthly entity. Okay? This actually should probably be reversed, and I'll reverse it here in a little bit, but Satan is always working. So Satan, through up to this point, right, starting with Babylon, was working with Babylon to start to destroy the Jews, and then all of what would be called the Gentiles, the Philistines, and all of those
we're coming across that, and we're specifically, more importantly tonight, Egypt was coming across the Jews, trying to take out the Jews. That didn't work. And so then Satan works through the Roman government to try to take out Jesus. Everything that happened to Jesus upon his death was sealed by the Roman government. Remember that, because that's going to come back into play at the end. He will work through that same earthly system in the end times. And it's my personal belief that one of the last one-world religions, or the last one-world religion, the Mystery Babylon, will be fulfilled through, in my opinion, the Roman Catholic Church. That's my opinion. Okay? There's a lot of symbolism in there with the papacy. The papacy actually took, there was a decree by the last Roman Empire where he gave the power of the Roman throne to the Pope. And so that whole Roman Empire is still living on through the Pope. And that's a great couple of books if you can get through it. One of them is The Mystery Babylon, and it talks about all the parallelisms within the Roman Catholic Church and pagan/Babylon worship. It's really kind of scary to look at it. One of the things that we see with the Antichrist, and Antichrist is anything against what Jesus is saying, right? It's anti. Jesus says what? I am the Son of God. I am the way. I am the path to God. The Roman Catholic Church says, no, we're the path to God. We are the God. In fact, even in some of the early dictates of if you become a priest, some of the books you have to read, it says in there that God bends to the will of the priest. And so the will of the brother, the priest blesses you or curses you, God obeys that. And the only way to God is through the priesthood. These are some subtle things that on the surface we don't see. But this is some of the scary stuff with religious type institutions, because they take the place of God. Very different than church-based relationship, which is what we believe in. So in verse 6 of chapter 12, this is all just kind of catching us up. The woman fled into the wilderness, but she has a place prepared for her. So we now have our timeline set. All of that first portion of 12 was kind of giving us a behind the scenes to this 7-year period we call the tribulation. We've got 3.5 years on either side. This is the midway point. At the midway point of that, remember when the rapture of the church happens, here, right? Somewhere there. We're already gone. The church body, which is represented from here, the body of Christ. Okay? We're out of the way. Once that happens, you have the 7 years. In the midway point, verse 7, or verse 6, we'll start there. The woman fled into the wilderness where she had a place prepared for her by God, that she should be fed there 1,260 days, which if you equate that is 3.5 years. So this is the fleeing part. So Jews flee out of Jerusalem. And that's part of why I believe that the war with Damascus, the Magog invasion, happens somewhere here, because the Jews are out of Jerusalem at this point. So they're not using the fuel for the weapons if they're not there. Right? So that has to be here. That's just my viewpoint. It's not make or break it into heaven's doctrine. Okay? Verse 7, war broke out in heaven, like when his angels fought with the dragon and his angels fought. So there's war in heaven at this halfway point. And Satan is thrown down, he's cast out to the earth. So we're Satan right now. Satan right now is, he's wherever he wants to be, comes or goes. He can be in heaven, he can be wherever he's at, just like we read in Job. But he hasn't been cast out. This war in heaven has not happened yet. Okay, so the dragon was cast out, verse 9, that serpent old called the devil, and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was cast into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And then I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, "Now salvation and strength in the kingdom of our God, and the power of his Christ have come. And for accuser of our brother, who accuses them before our God day and night, has been cast down." Verse 11, and then they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and the word of their testimony, and they did not love their lives to death. Therefore, rejoice, O heaven, and you who dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea, for the devil has come down to you, that midway point, having great wrath, because he knows he has a short time. That's where we're picking it up tonight. So we're picking it up tonight at this point here. Okay? Verse 13. So, excuse me. All that first portion of chapter 12 kind of gave us the behind the scenes, the motivation as to what's going on. It's kind of setting the stage to why there's such a big war. Why is there so much hatred towards God and towards the Jews and towards, you know, God's children? It's not that people really don't dislike you because of their belief. It is a spiritual war. That's the problem. Light and darkness cannot coexist. John tells us that the dark can't even comprehend the light. And so when you have that person that just doesn't like you because you're a believer and you can't understand why. I mean, if you think about it, if you really look at most believers and you say, okay, let me examine their life. And you start to examine their life and you go, okay, well, you know, all in all, you're a pretty good person. You don't really treat people that badly. Yeah, you have your moments where you fall down, but you're honest. You know, you try to do the right thing. You share what you have. You try to help people out. I mean, yeah, that person may be annoying, but does that cause hatred? Now, when I get worked up inside and I really start to like not like somebody, it's usually because of something that they have done. Like, if you talk about anybody that has ever, like, abused a child, I'm like, I don't even care, I don't want to hear no more, I'm ready to take you out. And that's one of my buttons. You did what? You touched that innocent little baby. No more questions. It's go time. Now, that's, to me, justifiable maybe hatred, not in the Lord's eyes, I'm not saying that at all. But someone could go like, okay, I can see your point. Or somebody who takes an innocent person and victimizes them. Or steals from somebody. That's like, you know, that's just not right. When we look at the Christian and they're not doing that, where's the hatred coming from? Why do people with a passion hate Christians when they're not doing those things? I mean, yeah, we're annoying. Right? We're telling you about God and, you know, maybe annoying, you know, maybe you've got a spouse that's always giving you hints and you're like, come on, leave me alone, you know? But all in all, it's not that bad, right? Where does that hatred come from? That's the whole point of the first portion of chapter 12. And now you can understand it. Now you can see it. When you're watching on the news and you see these people who just have such a hatred for the church or for people of faith. And some of it, listen, some of it is earned because a lot of churches have abused people. There's a lot of bad counterfeits out there. And you can't judge a true, loving, holy God through the inadequacies of fallen man. And that's important to remember too. But, you know, one of the best ways for Satan to get in and to jack this whole thing up is to counterfeit God's church and corrupt it. And so you're flipping on the TV one night, and you're listening to this guy, and he's yapping at you about sending him money. I need money. If you don't give me money, you're not in the will of God. You don't love. I mean, this is this kind of guilt trip. And you're like, well, that's what church is. He's like, I don't want to be like that. That's not the true church. That's the counterfeit. That's the hatred going on. And it's all behind the scenes. So I think this is very important in the first part of 12, just to kind of set that tone so you understand that all that motivation is coming from Satan. And at this point, when you read, now he's really mad, okay? He's really out for them, okay? He's really, really serious about turning on the fight. Verse 13, now when Satan, or the dragon, saw that he had been cast into the earth, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. Okay, so who was that? So, he persecuted the Jews. So the fight is on. Right? So he is seriously attacking the Jews. Now, if you know anything about World War II, part of Germany's plan, Hitler's plan, was to blame the Jews for the state of the economy and the state of the country on the Jews, even though they really didn't have anything to do with it. You know, they were coming out of World War I, they were coming out of the Great Depression, and it's like it wasn't their fault. But because they were viewed as a, you know, kind of a lesser class type of people, and again, Satan's working through him, attacking the woman. That was crazy. They started, you know, just harassing them, and then started boycotting them, and it just gradually got worse. And I was watching a thing when I was sick. I had ADHD. I don't know, was that on American History Channel? I don't know, it was World War II for like 4 days for me. I was like, this is great. Not being sick, but that was great. But it's just all this history of World War II, I was just watching it. And he would set up art displays of Jewish people, of artists, and then above every little painting, whatever, he would say how it was disgracing the people and how it was bringing the morality of the Germans down and what a disgrace it was. And so he was just indoctrinating these people over and over about how they were the enemy. And that's kind of, you know, that was big. I mean, there's what, some 13 million Jews or something died in that. That's nothing compared to what's going to happen. Because it's full-fledged now. It's a full-on war. So from that point, he declares war on the Jews. And it's also at that point where the number of the beast is put into this beautiful mother. Yep, jewel. I don't like jewel green, that's no fun. It's gonna be bad. The number of the beast comes in. 666, and it's calculated. Interesting, one of the titles for the Pope, if you take the numbers in Roman letters, they all have certain, right? They all have a certain number pattern, right? The B is 5, right? The C is 100, all that stuff. So if you take that, I don't know, I'll have it for you next week, but if you take the title of the Pope and you assign every single number to that title, it's three words, and then you add those three words together, you get 666. So, cool stuff. I'm not saying that that is the number of the beast. I'm not saying that because I believe it's the person, not necessarily a system. But could that person be the leader of the system? Maybe. Yeah, quite possible. All right, so This is the fourth vision of the woes here that we see, and it's really having a big effect on the Jews. So this fourth vision begins from chapter 12, verse 13, and it goes all the way through 13, verse 18. That's the span there. Now, this happens for 42 months. If you break this down, it also equates to 42 months. Interesting enough, because we'll get to it in a moment, we'll look at that 42 number again as this whole scene of right here, parallels this right here, the second half, parallels the flight of the children of Israel out of Egypt. It mirrors it. Okay? The abomination of desolation is what happens there in the middle. The midway point when he's taking down the earth, spoken of Daniel the prophet, Matthew 24:15. This is the beginning of the great tribulation. Now, you've heard me say this entire thing is tribulation, and it's true. This entire thing is tribulation for the world. In Matthew's perspective, who is he talking to? He's talking to the Jews. So, within this time of tribulation, specifically to the Jews, you have great tribulation, because that tribulation is not only involving everybody, but there's also a set tribulation that's focused upon you. So when you read that, that helps you give understanding, because some people will say, oh, the abomination of desolations is here, because that's the start of the great tribulation. And if you don't understand the audience and what he's talking about, you're gonna miss that mark by 2.5 years. Okay? No pun intended. But tribulation, Matthew is specifically talking to the Jews. The time of Jews' great tribulation happens here. Are the Jews in tribulation here? Well, they're part of the world tribulation, yes, but they're actually living in peace right here. As they would be even in today's standards. Right? Because they're allowed temple worship, there's a peace treaty in place, the temple's rebuilt, everything seems to be going fine. Everything seems to be going great. In fact, a lot of them start to fall for the Antichrist because the Antichrist starts to look like the Messiah fulfilling all the promises that they were looking for Jesus to do. Verse 14, but the woman was given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place, where she is nourished for a time and times and half a time, and in the presence of the serpent. So, given wings like an eagle. This is refuge of the Jews. Turn to Exodus 14, verse 5. We see this now parallel with the Exodus from Egypt. So Exodus 14, verse 5. You can see some of this same kind of verbiage start to come into play. Now it was told the king of Egypt that the people had fled, and the heart of Pharaoh and his servants turned against the people, and they said, why have we done this? Why have we let Israel go from serving us? So they fled. And now Egypt was like, wait a second. After they said, go, get out of here, right after all the plagues, kind of, we've got some plagues here. We've got some trumpets and some seals being opened. And they're like, oh, just go. And after they leave, they were fled into the wilderness. Then they were pursued. And Egypt pursued them with a vengeance, just like the beast will. Now, go over to 19, verse 4 in Exodus. Check this out. This is the Lord's response to the children of Israel. You have seen what I did to the Egyptians and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to. So we see the Lord, God, brought
God will bring him out of Jerusalem during that time. Same type of verbiage. Okay? They're going to be miraculously taken away. This flight is from Jerusalem to Judea, according to Matthew 24:16. A lot of people believe that it's the side of Petra, but we don't really know. Okay? Verse 15. So the serpent spewed water out of his mouth like a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away by the flood. Now remember, we're in Revelation, so there's a lot of illustration. So whenever we see those words, like a or as a, we know that he's not talking literal. So I doubt that this serpent, right, the beast, Satan, the dragon, opens up his mouth and a whole bunch of water comes out. Because John says he opens his mouth like a flood. Okay? So, what could he be referencing to? He could be referencing that he's just sending a big army. Sending out this huge army after him. How do we get that? If you go to Jeremiah 46:7. We'll look at one in Isaiah. Jeremiah 46:7 says, "Who is coming up like a flood, whose waters move like the river?" Verse 8, you can see on. Egypt rises up like a flood, and its waters move like the river. Again, we have some parallelism with the way the world is working, the Antichrist is working against the Jews, just as Egypt did. And Egypt, we know, in the Old Testament times, is representative of the world. Remember we talked about the beast coming out of the sea? Out of the sea. Well, the sea is referenced often in God's eyes as the peoples, the nations. Okay? So now let's take a look at Isaiah 59:19. I'm sure you're all there right now. So they shall fear the name of the Lord from the west and his glory from the rising sun when the enemies come in like a flood. So when the dragon or the beast opens his mouth, what is he doing? Sending out those armies against them. Okay? Now, what's kind of also interesting is he's using that word flood, and if you go back to Revelation chapter 10, I think I mentioned this when we were covering the section, but in Revelation chapter 10, verse 1, I saw another mighty angel coming down from the heaven, clothed with a cloud, and a rainbow was on his head. So when we hear the word rainbow, what do we think of? What do we think of the event of Noah? Right? Because after the flood, after God took out everybody but the eight people in the boat, he put a bow in the sky, a rainbow. And the idea was is that every time it rains, right, you would see that cloud, especially if you were in bare shoes. You just go on through this horrific event where it never rained before, and all of a sudden it rains, and it doesn't stop raining, and before you know it, the whole world's gone. So the next time it started raining again, you think you'd be like, oh, do we need to get back in the boat? I mean,
that would be a chilling experience with rain. It rained once and it took out everything. So he put this sign in the heavens, the rainbow, to say, hey, I won't ever do that again. It's God's covenant. Now here's what's kind of cool if you tie these two together. So when we see the bow, we understand that God's protecting us. This angel that comes down, he has that bow upon his head. And when people look upon it, what do they see? I'm protected. Okay, I'm protected. He's got the covenant. Protected from the flood of the enemy. Now, it may not be literal water that we're being protected from, but God's covenant is there. God's going to protect these Jews as if it was a flood. And the referencing, the word flood, even though it may be talking about a party or not a literal actual water event, God's telling the Jews in this demonstration, especially with this angel, you're protected. I won't forget my covenant. And that's what's kind of great about all this, because when this happened here, when the Jews turned against Jesus, a lot of people thought, oh, there's no hope for the Jews. They're done. They lost their position. You know, they were the ones who were supposed to usher in the Messiah. And they were out there in the courtyard crucified, and they were part of it, right? It was the Jewish leaders that put him on the cross. Well, it was our sin that put him on the cross. We know that, right? But when you read the story, it's like, what are you doing, Jews? This is what you've been waiting for. Over and over and over again, all through the Old Testament, right? Even as they're leaving Egypt, send us a Savior. Get us out of here. Break us of our bondage. Moses comes. You're our hero, Moses. And then they want, hey, maybe Moses isn't the guy. Maybe we need to go back. We have so much better in Egypt. They're always turning, right? They're always right there at the door of the promise and going, ah, missing it. And we are too often. But this is the cool thing. This is where God says the new covenant is between my father and my son, because the Jewish covenant, they couldn't fulfill. If we had any covenant with our salvation, we're no better. We wouldn't be able to fulfill either. And so that's why the new covenant is so great, because it's between the Father and the Son, and there's no fulfilling on your part. You just are a partaker. But if you're looking at that going, the Jews missed it. They're done. Game over. God says, no, I made a promise to him. I made a promise to him way back here with old Abraham. And that's what I'm going to take care of. And all the way through, many years, many tribulations, World War II, all these things, being dispersed, right? Not coming back until after World War II, finally getting a nation, even getting their nation. 6 days later, they're under attack already, and they've been under attack all this time, even to this day, as they're still trying to say, hey, we're a country. No, you're not. Yes, we are. All the way to here, where the covenant is finally confirmed. God's going to say, you know what? You're going to have a false Messiah. And at the end, right here, he's going to turn against you. But remember my covenant. Because my covenant, I will put you on my wings, and I will carry you safely. And I will be here. That's what's so cool about that. That's what's so great. Now, here's something else I want to talk about. If you go to Numbers 33, and I'm going to give this to you to do on your But this is the kind of the venture of the children of Israel as they leave Egypt. And if you read through there, they make stops of refuge along the way. God is providing for them along the way. Do you know how many stops of refuge there are in Numbers 33? I'll give you a little hint. Isn't that cool? There's 42 stops. See how it parallels? It's the coolest thing ever. There's 42 stations of refuge that the children of Israel go through as they're leaving Egypt, and then there's 42 months that God protects them in the end. Verse 16. But the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon had spewed
Now, again, I don't know if this is literal water. It very well could be. But whatever it is coming out of this dragon's mouth, maybe it's the armies that he sends out. Whatever it is, the earth swallows it up. It's kind of crazy. Very much like in Numbers 16:32 in the wilderness in Quran, where the word swallowed up the enemies of Israel. Just opened up, just took them up. Kind of crazy. So, can that happen? That should occur. Do we have to explain it by science? Why? Why can't we just allow God to be God? Still can't explain gravity, but we still all kind of accept it, maybe, you know. We try to defy it. You know? Dave can defy it for a little while until he runs out of jet fuel. And then eventually it wins. It comes up, you know. So it just still don't understand. They still don't understand how the human mind can focus and move and react as fast as it does. No explanation. But yet, it just appeared that way. Just one day, whoop, there's an eye. That's pretty neat, isn't it? Now, for 8 years, I was a professional magician. I never claimed ever in any of my shows that I had any special ability. In fact, I had in almost all my shows this little disclaimer. This little disclaimer of what you see is optical illusion, puzzle for your eyes, tricks your minds. You see things you don't see, you don't see things you should see. See me? I still remember the pattern after all this time. But I say, you know, I don't do miracles. Only God has true miracles. These are just tricks. And even though I would say that, people would be like, you're not magic. I'm like, no, I'm not. It's just deception. And these things can all be explained. In fact, Heidi would be like, show me how you do that trick. And I'd show her, and she'd be like, that's kind of stupid. I know. I just laugh all the time. You know, look, it's gone. And he goes, whoa. I'm like, oh, that's so funny. But that's the simplicity of it. But the thing is, when God works, there is no explanation. And there doesn't have to be an explanation. And there's no trickery. And there's no illusion. I once watched this thing on how they went through the plagues of Egypt and how they said, well, here's scientifically how it all happened. And it's like, why can't God just be God? Why can't we just allow him to be God? If we have to understand everything, then he is no longer God. And so could the earth swallow up peace? Absolutely. I mean, if you don't believe, listen, if you don't believe that the earth can swallow up the enemies that is sent after them, do you believe in the ocean of the dead? Kind of as simple as that. You see, if you believe the first few words of the Bible, you have no problem with me. In the beginning, you are created. If you believe that, then, yeah, Jonah was swallowed by a great fish. Oh, well, that's just an analogy. Okay, well, Jesus must be a liar because he even said Jonah was swallowed by a fish. So, you know, that's what faith is, guys. But if I have faith in a God who in the beginning created, who rose from the dead, who can open up the ears to swallow up the eyes, then... And yeah, I have faith in something. Unless, let me tell you, that's a stronger faith than to say, oh, I just came from nothing. I just was born out of existence. Evolution. And there's no proof of evolution. Now, natural selection, there's proof of it. There's natural selection in this room. Gabby doesn't have dark hair. That's natural selection. Okay.
all those dark pigments of her hair popped in part of her. That's natural selection, right? Who's got red hair? That's natural selection. That's not evolution. Somebody came in here with a darker skin, that's natural selection. You get two dark people together, they have a dark baby. Natural selection. That's how you go from having one type of dog down to this little thing that you call a dog that looks more like a rat. And that's a dog. And then you got another dog that stands up as high as you, and like, that's a dog. They're both dogs. They're both dogs. One's not half monkey or half horse. That's natural selection. No creationist will ever doubt natural selection. But evolution, it still hasn't been. There's no links. All the links that are put together have been fabricated. It's not there. It just hasn't happened. And if you believe it, you got way more faith than believing in there's a creator. So, when it says, the earth helped the woman, swallowed up the woman, I believe that's what happened. Verse 17, and the dragon was enraged with the woman. Really enraged. I mean, you've got to take that word, like, seriously. He was really, really mad. He went to make war with the rest of her offspring and those who keep the commandments of God and those who have the testimony of Jesus Christ. And so, he's cruising after the Jews. He swallows them up, protects the Jews, and he turns his attention on any part that is either offspring of those or people who have given their life to the Lord. Okay? So, a lot of people have believed that there's really no true believers after the midway point. I don't know if I buy that, because I believe there's believers happening all along the way. Right? And even along here, there's some believers that are happening. And these Jews become believers. So I don't think you can say that there's no Jews after the midway, or no Christians after the midway point. With that word to the trumpet said, you know, no one repents of their deeds. Okay? So he is seeking out everything. If anything to do with believing, you know, pretty much he's going to take it out of his blood. So if you are existing, if you're not under God's protection in the place that he's prepared for you, then yeah, you're being sought. You're being hunted. Mm-hmm. And you're probably being taken out. Okay? Probably not going to make it. So that's setting up that whole scene. And we're a little bit early tonight, but I don't want to get into 13 because we're going to start to even break this down more. We're going to flip that. And we're going to start talking about the beasts. And then we're going to start to talk about, okay, there's two different beasts. There's one for the land and one for the sea. There's the false prophet and then the antichrist beast. And it's all generated from Satan as he fills him and possesses him. So we'll keep building this out a little bit more so you understand the characters at play. And then there's a woman, there's a harlot that rides one of the beasts, which we'll talk about too, is the mystery of Babylon and how that plays into this whole scene. So we're a little bit early, but we got some time for some questions. Maybe you have some questions about some things past. So we'll just kind of open up all comments. If there's any comments. That's all I'm curious. Here's my question. A little fast today. I was a little fast, but I think we've got to kind of slow down with the amount of material we're taking at this point, just so we understand. It can be very confusing with the whole beast and what we're bringing to the animals.
I'm just curious, you say that Satan could be in heaven, but then you say Satan, we're darkness to can't comprehend the light. So how can Satan be in heaven? How is that possible?
Well, we get that from Job. Mm-hmm. So when Job asks Satan, as Satan comes up to heaven, he says, where are you then? It's going to go on the earth. And so, yeah, he goes up. And even here, in 12, it says that he was in heaven accusing the brethren both day and night. Mm-hmm. So it's not until that war that he is thrown out of heaven.
gotta really try hard to remember that. You remove the word against flesh and blood. And so, when you look at family members or spouses or people who think about us that lash out on us, just remember, maybe they're not in the best place right now. It's hard. It's so hard, isn't it? It's so hard. Because you look at your spouse and and then of course, they lash out at you, so you've got to hit that ball back. Okay? Hit that harder. Lash back at them. You just got to pause and go, wait a second. And then know what's going on. And what's the whole motive of it? What's the whole motive? Remember, when you're being used by the enemy, you don't realize it. So when you're the person that is being attacked, it's your job just to kind of step back and go, okay, I know what's going on. Now you use the space because the enemy is trying to cause division. He's in division with us, and he's trying to ruin our witness. And so you have to remember that. And as soon as you fire back, well, then he's won. And you play right into his plan. And then if it's you, and your spouse just kind of says, hey, guess I'm going to use some space or whatnot, or whatever, acts appropriately, and then you come back to your senses, you realize, oh, man, those are the best fathers. You know, for us. And usually when we're thinking that, we're in the flesh. We're in the flesh. You don't realize we're in the flesh because why are we mad? Because I was spoken to, or I was mistreated, or I wasn't cared for enough. What are those things? They're all I statements. I wasn't. And the hard part about that we have to really sort out as Christians is, we need to be respected, we want to be loved, we want to be these things. But if we look to Christ as our model, he was beaten, he was rejected, and he modeled it for us. It's not like he sat up there in heaven and said, hey, I expect you to do all this stuff. Everything Hebrews tells us that he went through as our high priest, we go through as well. There's nothing that we go through that he didn't go through, I should say. And so, when we start looking and getting mad at, it's usually me statements. Remember what it means to be a Christian. It's to die for ourselves and focus on the other person. And that's really what that battle is. And so every time I've ever gotten mad, it's usually because of my selfishness. That's what the enemy uses us most. Right? He wants to say, okay, you don't want to believe in God right now? I'm going to make you God. It's all about you. And if you're mistreated, then that's where a lot of these fights come from. So a lot of stuff comes from. We have to remember that. So next time you get into your next argument with your spouse, step back and go, okay, what's side going on here? What's going on? Is it, am I mad because me? Okay, well, if I'm being mistreated, why am I being mistreated? Spiritual warfare. The enemy's trying to take us out. It's going to be space. I'm not going to engage. And come back later. Or something like that. Instead of going, oh, I'm king too. And now I want to have my part in this argument. And that's what we tend to do. At our house, we call it, we play tennis, right? Well, I say, oh, yeah, I'll get that. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And now we're just hitting the ball back and forth. And you can tell. Well, you do this. Well, you do that. Well, you do this. Well, you do that. Well, you go, go, go. Okay. You're the king. It's not that easy. But hopefully it gives you a little understanding and insight to what's going on. Because that's what happens personally. It's the same thing happening globally. Sure it is. But we know, Jesus said,
Two words.